Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office. It's Steve. Thank you so much for attending episode 30 of the CPE Today podcast. Today's podcast is going to be looking at different aspects of working remotely, what it means to actually work remotely, as well as some best practices with respect to different software applications and different techniques and services and things that you can do. Today's class is going to be examining a bunch of different techniques, including, for example, some of the better practices for hosting, as well as some of the technology that you might want to incorporate, as well as some of the main options that are out there for enterprise service applications that you might want to consider utilizing for your organization. So we are going to go ahead and dive right into it for today. But before we do, I do want to remind you that today's podcast is eligible for CPE credit. If you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn credits for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. After watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code WEA1. You'll take a short 5-question quiz and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's super simple, efficient, fast, and easy. And it's a great way of getting credits for something that you're probably already doing. So after watching or listening today, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code WEA1. So today's class is all about working anywhere. And what is the tools, technologies, services, platforms, and apps that can really kind of help facilitate this? Let's start first with just kind of talking objectively about some of the things that you might want to consider and why working remotely might be really efficient and effective for your organization. The fact is today we live in this global economy. You know, I'm here in my house in Big Bear Lake, California, and you're wherever you happen to be watching or listening anywhere around the world. We can work and be connected like we're sitting side by side with each other. Your company could be located in Los Angeles. You could have staff in India, China, anywhere throughout Europe, spread across the world. And your customers could be located pretty much anywhere. As long as we have some sort of common access, thankfully provided through the internet, it's pretty efficient and fast to be able to do. And it's common, for example, in today's environment in 2021, to do business with clients, customers, and vendors really kind of all over the world. And we really need to be thinking globally in order to remain competitive. It's very easy, for example, for somebody to move in on your organization that's located around the world that can be competitive to what you are doing. As such, you know, it's easy to have customers anywhere in the world. I could tell you in our business, for example, Devmatix, our main company here, we recently signed two new clients, one based in Europe and one based in South Africa, that found us through our website and connected and talked. And we've started this relationship and I'm pretty optimistic about it, you know. And it's incredible to think that we're able to do this, you know, without actually having to get in a plane and travel. And so working anywhere, in my opinion, is a competitive advantage in 2021, because it gives us the ability not only to work anywhere, but also have anywhere in the world work with us. We're going to be talking about the virtual office. It's the technology, the software, the tools that allow us to be connected to our organization by giving us the ability to be able to operate. Anywhere that we have internet access, we're able to work and conduct business. Now, what is the virtual office? The virtual office is a combination of a bunch of different things. Offsite live communication and services that allow us to be able to work without actually having to be in the same physical place. It allows, for example, our organizations to gain all these incredible benefits like cost reduction, better access to services and technology, the ability to be able to work and conduct business anywhere in the world, while all at the same time maintaining this business professionalism. What's incredible about, you know, the virtual office is that for the most part, we can look and feel like a big Fortune 500 company with working from home or working from a Starbucks. It doesn't really kind of take much, you know, and with just a good camera, a good computer, a good headset, you know, so that you can hear and talk with people. And honestly, just selling yourself and having a good presentation can take you so far with respect to being able to operate anywhere. Now, in my definition, a virtual office is really freedom. You know, it gives me the ability to be able to work beyond the traditional limitations of that single physical office. Personally, I've never been a big fan of getting up and commuting to work in the morning. I've thankfully only had to do it for a little period of time in my life. I like working from home and I like working from the road. I like traveling and I like being able to have my personal life and my professional life meet each other. And so in my opinion, I would say that this virtual office is really freedom. It's the ability to really kind of be able to live your life without really kind of having the traditional limitations of a physical 8-to-5, 9-to-5 office and having to physically be in that one single place. And it gives the user the freedom to be able to make the world their workplace. My family, we've got a big old RV, and for the last several years, for weeks at a time, we'll pack up and we will go and travel. We've experienced most of the Western United States at this point, and we've been able to do this and be able to continue to operate our business, work with our staff, and work with our clients because of the technology and because of the hardware and software that we've put in place that allows us to be able to do this. With better access to internet coming in the coming years, I expect to be able to do more of this. And I think it's kind of crazy to think about all the folks that are, you know, essentially handcuffed to their desk because that's where they believe work needs to be conducted. I personally believe whether you're in an RV, in a tent, in a Starbucks, or in your home, the quality of work doesn't really matter. You can really kind of do anything that you would like. And what, as I like to say, it empowers users to be able to adapt their work life to meet their personal life. In our family, personal life takes precedent. We're able to travel. We're able to experience things, have amazing adventures without knowing like, oh man, I got to get back to the office on Monday. No, as long as there's internet access, we can continue to operate. Let's talk through some of the benefits of working from home and then some of the things that we might want to think about that are benefits of having a physical nexus of business and a physical place to work. The first thing I want to draw your attention to is cost savings. From an organizational perspective, you can save a tremendous amount of money by shifting your folks to work from home. On average, telecommuting, where you allow your staff to predominantly work from home as their base of operations, can lower real estate and operational costs by $11,000 per employee per year. So this is a continual cost saving. It's a permanent reduction in costs when you have your staff work from home. And the reason being is, I mean, if you think about, for example, what it takes to actually be able to operate somewhere, you know, you think about the rent or the mortgage for the office building, you think about the common, the expenses with respect to the shared office equipment, you think about, you know, the environmental cost of, you know, having to, you know, cause pollution through driving to work every single day, and the gas cost that goes into it. You know, there are costs that are shared both by the employee as well as the employer. If the employee essentially always works from home, those costs are essentially eliminated, which is incredible. Now, I understand certain occupations don't lend themselves to working remote. I don't think airline pilots, for example, are going to be telecommuting anytime soon, nor do I think bus drivers. But for knowledge workers like accountants, lawyers, financial professionals, software developers, where essentially your office is primarily focused on a screen of some sort, there's no reason why you couldn't predominantly work from home. I could tell you the commute's great. You just walk up, make a cup of coffee in the morning, walk to your desk, and you could start working. Now, granted, there are some caveats here, having a dedicated work environment, good, sufficient, high-speed internet access, you know, that, and having the discipline to be able to get up and go to the office is a major piece of being able to work remotely. But, you know, assuming you could put those things in place, you can enjoy a serious cost savings by having your staff work remotely. And if we think about the COVID world that we live in now, why wouldn't you do this? I personally think living and working from home is not only in the employee's best interest, but also the employer. Generally, people who work from home have higher job satisfaction. They have, well, for usually better retention in the jobs that they are in, better work-life balance. You know, I can tell you for my wife, for a period of time, she was commuting from our home in Claremont to a job that was in South Orange County. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Southern California, if you look on a map, you're like, oh, that's not that bad. It's like 20 miles, you know, but 20 miles in at the LA metropolitan area might as well be in Timbuktu. You know, it was a 2-hour commute in each direction. You know, you add almost 4 hours of commuting time per day. I could tell you it really kind of drains that satisfaction, and it really does affect that work-life balance. You know, not having to have that commute really can improve life satisfaction for that employee. And I think they like their job a lot better. Liking your job a lot better will lead to decreased absenteeism, decreased attrition in terms of employee turnover. You know, if we think about staff, it's one of the most expensive things that we could ever do inside of our organization. As such, having people be happy so that they don't leave their job, in my opinion, is a major benefit to the company. It gives increased flexibility in work hours. I can tell you through multiple reports that I've read that many employees, for example, will happily take a pay cut or reduction in compensation of some degree for increased flexibility in their work life and increased flexibility with respect to their work hours. For our company, we don't really care when you work. You know, ideally, we'd like you to keep relative stable hours, relative business hours, but whether you start at 7 one day or 8 the next day or 10 the next day, as long as you meet the requirements of whatever we're trying to do, that's totally okay with us. And in fact, we find that, you know, kind of easy, it's an easy thing on our side to be able to allow our staff to do. Certainly, we see a better environmental footprint, you know, by not having to commute. That means we're helping the environment. And I think that's a nice, let's say, secondary or tertiary benefit of working from home. Now, it also gives you the ability to have an expanded candidate pool. If we think about where we would normally get our employees, traditionally, it's been whoever can get to our office, let's say, within an hour of time. And that's crazy if you think about, you know, the only people you could hire are that population that live within an hour of your office. Well, you know, that really isn't great. I mean, because, you know, it's fine if you live in a place like Los Angeles where there is a huge, you know, population of people, millions of people. But, you know, if you're in other, you know, smaller cities, for example, even where I live here in Big Bear Lake, if we were solely dependent on finding software developers and financial professionals in our community, you know, we wouldn't be in business. You know, the ability to work remote gives you the ability to hire anybody to work anywhere. And our entire technology platform is designed to allow people to do that. It gives us the ability to diversify our candidate pool, not only by geography in terms of being able to hire from any place, but then also folks that maybe wouldn't be a good fit for the traditional office environment. For example, stay-at-home parents, military spouses that are, you know, often moving, millennials, people with disabilities, and other candidates that might be really good at a specific job, but don't, for example, fit into that office environment well. Now, as great as the office is, there are some compelling reasons. Sorry, as great as telecommuting is, there are some major compelling reasons to keep the office. One of the biggest ones is less opportunity for collaboration. And also what I will say kind of in the same breath is losing company culture, especially the old way of thinking. If I can't see you, I can't manage you, was a thought that I think was predominantly spread through the 19th century American workforce that, you know, hey, you have to be here because if you're at home, you're not going to be working. And, you know, if you're not working, then we're not going to be able to collaborate. We're not going to be able to kind of keep the culture of our organization intact. And also, I will say in the same vein too, low producers can fly under the radar. They're kind of all similarly related to each other. Now, I think a lot of this can be managed through technology and through creating a positive workplace culture. I personally think, you know, geography is independent of somebody's motivation to want to work and get their job done and kind of be employed. So I think you can manage this, for example, through having applications like Microsoft Teams or using payroll applications and timekeeping track applications like Clockify, where people are keeping track of their time and you can see that they're working on. And the culture and collaboration can be mitigated again through kind of creating good company policies for communication. For example, in our company, we have a policy that whenever you're video chatting with somebody, it's cameras on. It's a loosely enforced policy. We understand everybody gets sick or it might be early in the morning, but whenever we have a company meeting, we always have cameras on so that people can get a chance to see each other and be able to talk and communicate. And I find that simple things like that, for example, create opportunities for people to get to know each other, and then we'll establish the culture of the organization. Additionally, we also make an effort to get people together as often as we can physically. My business partner lives in Oregon. I live here in California. We still get together a couple of times a year to do face-to-face business planning, visit with our clients, so on and so forth. And we find that when we have, for example, those physical face-to-face meetings, we tend to focus on higher value conversations. We focus on business planning and clients and what are we going to do with our organization versus when we're remote. Well, it's more, let's say, transactional. Hey, is payroll done? Hey, is the billing there? What's the status of this project? I mean, this is stuff that we wouldn't need to be face-to-face to begin with. Now, on the employee side, increased costs for the employee working from home. That's something to consider. I mean, if you're not incurring the cost with a central office, well, that means the employee is having to pick up the cost. So, you know, they might have, you know, increased internet service fees because they need a higher speed connection, or, you know, maybe they need to have a dedicated workspace with a desk and a computer. In our opinion, you know, myself and my colleagues, I've always felt that those costs are relatively minor and we just do our best to compensate our employees fairly and accurately, and also provide reimbursement for any costs that they might incur, because those are things that we would have done anyways. Now, there's also this idea of security. You know, if we're working with sensitive information, we need to put in correct policies and procedures with respect to ensuring that our staff meet the compliance requirements of whatever our organization is and whatever our clients expect from us. Now, I do want to draw your attention with respect to security compliance. There's a really good resource I want to make you aware of. So there's a group that I've really grown to love over the years that does incredible cybersecurity training called the SANS Institute. And longtime listeners to the CP Today podcast know that this is a company that I reference a lot. And they have some incredible resources here to help you train and learn with respect to how to manage security for your organization. They also have some really good free resources for those of you who are maybe just looking to learn a little bit more. If you head on over to SANS.org, and then if you scroll down on the page on the lower right-hand side, right below the top fold here, you'll see free resources. And if you scroll a little bit further down here, you'll see on the right-hand side, there's another one that says security policy templates. And if you check this out, they've got some incredible security policies that you might want to consider putting in place for your organization, including things like acceptable use policy, antivirus guidelines, clean desk, communication, data breaches, so on and so forth. And if you're going to have staff work remotely, it would be a good thing, for example, to have policies in place to keep them on the same page with respect to what the security requirements of the organizations are. And these security policies provided by the SANS Institutes are really kind of choose your own adventure. You can choose the different policies that make sense for you and the ones that you would maybe like to highlight for your organization. One such that I would recommend would be the acceptable use policy. And so if you read through this, you'll see, for example, it has throughout the document company name, client name, so on and so forth, employee name. Well, it's a find and replace. You go ahead and substitute company name for the name of your organization, and this policy is now unique to you. So this acceptable use policy, if you scroll down here, it kind of talks about what this policy is intended to do, you know, to reduce virus attacks, compromising of systems, so on and so forth. And then ultimately, if we come down a little bit further, you'll see for our general use and ownership, it talks through the obligations of this employee, you know, and what they're supposed to be doing, you know. So company name's proprietary information is stored on this computer. It's your responsibility to keep it insured, to only connect through secure protocols for the internet, so on and so forth. But often I feel that companies are missing this information, and because they're missing this information, they're not keeping their employees on the same page. And then you end up having people working in different directions. You have some people doing it this way, some people doing it another way, and you're working against the interests of the organization. Versus if you were to have policies set place, everybody is going to be working from the same page, and you will do a better job of essentially managing the security for that organization because everybody's going to know what's expected of them. So what are the essentials from working from home? Well, over the course of this series of this podcast, we're going to talk through many of these different components, such as what kind of communication services you're going to need, what type of remote access to your files and documents, what type of security recommendations are going to be best for keeping your information private, Today, we're going to talk through applications and cloud services to support your remote work and some different services that you might want to consider for establishing for your staff so that they know essentially how to work. And this answers the question of where do they work? And we'll also talk through many different collaboration tools with working through your colleagues. So tools like Microsoft 365 or Google and others can be absolutely essential for keeping people plugged in and working together. Now, I do have some recommendations with respect to working from home, both in terms of hardware that you might want to consider, as well as some general tips for working from home as well. Now, in terms of hardware, the good news is it really doesn't take a lot. And I would tell you that, if you were trying to outfit a person to work from their home or work from the road, you know, it's a couple $1,000 investment, but it's not dramatic. In reality is you probably already have a lot of this already for your staff. And I can tell you through better access and better planning, choosing the same machines, choosing the same cell phone providers, you can get really good economies of scale when choosing the technology for your organizations. Okay, so some hardware stuff that you might want to consider. First and foremost, I would tell you a dedicated private workspace with comfortable seating. Now, this isn't always possible. I'm fully aware of, for example, the privilege of living in a home, having a dedicated office. Let's say that's the highest level of this. But if not, I would tell you, just having a good kitchen table, with a decent chair can make a big difference. And, if you can't, for example, have quiet space, try to at least have quiet hours with respect to the different times that you'll work. And we'll talk more about that here in a minute with respect to work limits and time limits. But if you can, a dedicated private workspace with good seating. I have a good buddy of mine, one of my dear friends from college, when COVID occurred and he had to move home, well, guess what? He moved into the garage and they just parked their cars on the street now. But both him and his wife converted their garage into their workspace. And so it's kind of funny. I'll talk with him occasionally during work hours and you'll hear the ding of the washing machine because it just happens to be kind of near where he works. But you know what? It made a big difference in terms of just being able to operate. I recommend a lightweight but powerful laptop. Personally, I'm a big fan of the IBM used to make them, but the Lenovo ThinkPads. They're really well equipped. They've got great battery life. If you get the Yoga series, they're, for example, a flip around tablet, so you can use them in a lot of different ways. And they're really, really, really good, in my opinion, and reliable for remote work. You're certainly going to need fast, consistent, high quality internet access. The bigger, the better, so if you can get fiber optic, for example, that's always the best. But if you can't get fiber optic internet, at least having, good high quality cable access is usually enough. And when in doubt, you can always use a hotspot. One of the things I love about modern smartphones, both Android and iOS, is that they can be turned into a internet hotspot. And so, if we're traveling, for example, in our RV and I need to get online to do some work and we don't have internet access wherever we happen to be camping, I will just tether to my phone and I'll be able to use my phone as that internet hotspot, assuming we are somewhere with reception. Certainly a good chair, a good keyboard and mouse. If you're working remotely, I personally find that there's only working from a laptop. The keyboard and mouse is a good short-term solution, but it is not a good long-term solution. So I always like to have at least an external mouse that I will travel with. And then I'll continue maybe to use the keyboard. But if I'm going to be gone for a long period of time, I'll always bring a separate keyboard and mouse just so I can get that maximum productivity. I'm also a big fan of at least having two monitors wherever you happen to be working from. Having two screens is kind of like having a truck and a trailer. The trailer is a force multiplier, and it gives you the ability to do so much more than you could do with just a single truck in the bed of that truck. However, having a trailer gives you so much additional space that you could really do kind of a lot with it. And a second monitor is very much like that. Monitors aren't expensive. You can get, tons of different options, whether they're traditional HDMI monitor, or even what they've got now, they've got these kind of really cool USB monitors that you can get for travel purposes. So if you just go to your favorite online commerce store, whether it be Amazon or Newegg or something else like that, and you just search USB monitor, you'll find there are a ton of different monitors that you can choose from. They're mostly anywhere from about $120 to about $250, just depending on the size that you would like. Now, what's kind of cool about these, and let's just go ahead and pick one here. Let's take a look at this guy. These are intended to be traveled with. So this monitor, for example, has a little case. It just flips around. It kind of looks, for example, like an iPad in some respect. And it plugs into your existing computer and gives you a second display for wherever you happen to be working with. You know, so it's even sometimes even got additional USB ports, speakers, and other things like it. But, you know, what's kind of cool about this is that it gives you a secondary display that you can essentially work from. You know, you can use it for whatever purposes that you would like. You know, so you could either hook it up, for example, to your computer. Sometimes you could even hook it up to an Android device and use it as a secondary monitor. And I find services like this can be quite effective rather than kind of carrying a traditional monitor with it because they're so much lighter weight and they're intended to be traveled compared to a existing monitor that is not. Now, other tips for thinking about working from remote and working from home. I'd recommend that you have a plan. Write down your goals and objective. Attempt to identify what your biggest hurdles are, roadblocks, and then work to resolve those. You know, so if it might be a dedicated workspace and you don't have that, well, maybe then you set up work hours. And if it's something like childcare, maybe you find a family member or a colleague or a friend, for example, that can maybe watch your kids so you have some dedicated time to work and focus on making that time you have the most effective you possibly could. Or maybe you're like my buddy and you just open an office in your garage. It's not ideal, but you know what? It's better than not being able to work. Now, this is going to be a good example of do as I say, not as I do. I'm terrible at this, although I'm certainly trying to do the best I can. I think that most folks will find that when they work remote, they end up working more than they would in the actual office itself. And so I'd recommend that you set work hours as well as your daily limit. Try not to work more than 40 hours a week, a traditional work week. I personally find that when I work remote, you know, which has been most of my career, my average work week is between 50 and 60 hours. I'd like to pare it down as much as I can to get more back to a traditional work week. But I would tell you that you should set work hours and try to set your daily limit of what you'll do. Make a strong effort to communicate regularly with your colleagues and your clients about projects and deliverables. As with most relationship, communication is so very, very, very important. And having good lines of communication where you can ask questions, you can collaborate, you can get a hold of people, and you're telling them what you're doing and the status and how far along you are with something, I find gets rid of a lot of the issues that you might have had right from the get-go. You know, if people feel like, you know, you're just hanging at home watching, you know, daytime TV and bonbons, I mean, they're going to feel like they're not getting value for your employment. You know, however, if you're communicating regularly, you're getting back on email quickly, you're attending meetings, I find that to be probably one of the better things that you could do. You know, and I would also say that when you're talking with folks, be available for social interactions. You know, in our company, we always make a effort to talk. Hey, how was your Memorial Day weekend? How are the kids? Oh, what are your summer plans? I mean, I know this sounds, you know, trivial. This is stuff you would do anyways, but I've found with a lot of the organizations that I've worked with that are chat focused, that are using solutions like Microsoft Teams and Slack, you know, people don't take the time for social niceties. And I feel that that kind of creates an adverse work environment. But you take time. Hey, how are you? How was your morning? You know, what are your plans today? I find those little small social niceties make a big difference when you're not spending face-to-face time with people. When meeting with staff and clients, personally, I recommend that you keep your camera on. I avoid multitasking when I'm meeting with people, and I try to show that I'm engaged with the conversation. This is a really small thing, but when I'm meeting with my clients, I always make sure, or I do my best so they can see my hands. You know, I'll have my hands in front of me, you know, so that they don't think, for example, I'm just responding to other, you know, inquiries or working on email or something else. I want them to know that they have my undivided attention, that I'm making a strong effort to communicate with them. So having that camera on, I find, helps create that personal environment. Track your time on projects, set milestones, identify success metrics. There are plenty of amazing applications, which we'll talk through in this series, that you can consider using to track your time and to track and communicate project progress status and progress on the different things that you're working with. So keeping those in place not only is really good from an efficiency and effectiveness position, but also for your own purposes so you can see how you spent your time and how you spent your day. It's also really good when, you know, for example, bonus time comes around, employee review time, to be able to show exactly what you did and how you did it, you know, and show that there is value being communicated. All right, let's go ahead and have our first review question. Which of the following would not be recommended for working from home or elsewhere? Okay, is it a lightweight but powerful laptop? Yep, absolutely, that is recommended. Is it a smartphone which can also be used for a hotspot? Yes, absolutely. Is it a headset and webcam for video conferencing? You betcha, you definitely want to have that here. Which would you not want to have? Well, you would not want to have a loud environment with constant interruption. Try to get yourself a dedicated workspace if possible. If not a workspace, definitely try to get some dedicated work hours. All right, let's go ahead and go into our next section here. And let's talk through virtual desktops and enterprise applications. This is where we're going to spend the rest of our day talking today. So in future episodes, we will dive into collaboration tools. We'll dive into project management tools and other things like that. But today I want to kind of take a higher level perspective, and I want to kind of dive into some of the more complicated side of this, which is getting the right software to be able for remote work to be effective. Now, a virtual desktop is typically something you yourself are not going to do directly. This would be something that would be kind of figured out, let's say, at the enterprise level. You know, typically, you know, the company will set how they want to do this up here, and then it will flow down to the rest of the staff. Although, you know, in certain circumstances, especially for smaller businesses, you could choose to do this on your own if you'd like. And I've got a number of recommendations here for different VDIs or virtual desktops interfaces that you might want to consider, as well as some different enterprise applications that I know to be very effective for geographically dispersed team. Now, a virtual desktop is like a desktop experience, except instead of being on a local computer, it exists on a centrally managed server or a cloud provider somewhere on the internet. You know, we have these incredible data centers that are located all over the world from companies like Amazon and Microsoft with their Azure environment or Rackspace or DigitalOcean. There are a ton of these different companies. And what they are is they're infrastructure providers. They provide servers and networking gear and internet access and power supplies. And they essentially have taken on the cost of building out cloud infrastructure. And you can host your company's data and applications with them and then pay them a ongoing operational fee to maintain your company's applications and data. So instead of having, for example, a local computer where all of the applications and data are on that little block box, that little beige box next to your desk, you are connecting through the internet and you are working on somebody else's server somewhere in a data center around the world. And it'll probably be with one of the major providers like Amazon or Microsoft or others. And so you work on their infrastructure. This allows a company to provide a cloud server based desktop experience to all workers in a monitored, secured environment. And it's also going to provide really kind of good security and data sharing, because instead of having, you know, everybody working on their own computer and then finding a way to share and sync files, maybe through services like Dropbox or, you know, OneDrive and others, everybody's already remote to begin with, and everybody's working typically from one or a couple of servers, and it's like they're sitting side by side with each other. Even though they're not physically in the same geographic space, they have data that is essentially sitting side by side with other people's data. And so when you're working in a virtual desktop environment, everybody is working remote, regardless if they're in the office or if they're in the Starbucks or working at their home, because all work is being conducted on some sort of central server managed by the company. Now, it could be in the company's data center. Most often it's not, but it is on a central server, no matter where it happens to be. And these central servers are managed on behalf of the employee. And when we are setting this up for a company, we can standardize how authentication works, passwords, how security works. It really kind of gives us much tighter control than if we had 100 computers with 100 employees with 100 people doing it all a little bit differently. And this is a great stopgap for all different types of organizations. But if your company has, for example, a number of proprietary applications that aren't designed to work in the cloud, meaning, you know, they don't have a mobile app, for example, or you can't interact with it using Microsoft Edge or Chrome, meaning it's not like a web-based application, it's a traditional Windows thick client application. Well, this is a great stopgap because you know what? You can configure those in almost all circumstances. They'll work if you install them on a cloud server. It's essentially Windows just running up in the cloud. Now, there are a number of providers you can consider, and the first three that we're going to talk about today are going to be Amazon Workspaces, Centrum, and Ace Cloud Hosting. Now, these are infrastructure providers. They are hosting providers. They will do this on your behalf, either, you know, kind of very limitedly, like Amazon, where they'll essentially just configure it and have a nice life, go nuts, or in Centrum or Ace Cloud's position, where they will bend over backwards to make sure it works effectively for financial providers. Professionals, and that's really kind of what their business is designed to do. Now, if you're looking for, let's say, the cheapest, the most robust, and the one that you can kind of do anything that you want with, well, it's definitely going to be Amazon Web Services, specifically their Workspaces platform. Amazon Workspaces is a centrally managed desktop computing service in the cloud, and it's intended to be a VDI where you can run any Windows application from a fast, secured, easy-to-use cloud application. And a IT department for your organization could set up the AWS account and then allocate workspaces to staff, and they will all act like one single consolidated server. The applications themselves would be running in whatever type of workspace is configured, whether it's a Windows server or something else. And you could install whatever other applications you would like as well. Users then remote into this application using the Workspaces app, and they can connect to this workspace using pretty much any type of device, from anything from like a computer, a traditional computer, Mac and OS fully supported, or Windows, a tablet, iPad, Android, even the Kindle devices. And they even have some small dedicated Xero devices that essentially are 100% cloud connected. And all they do is connect to that cloud desktop. And even though you're connecting over the internet, it looks and feels just like a computer right in front of you. It requires no monthly upfront investment. You can cancel at any time. And the pricing of this is pretty standard, from anywhere from $25 to $75, depending on the type of machine that you are looking to get. And sometimes even, for example, the licensing for that machine will come with it. Now, the biggest drawback to AWS is that it is a professional product. There's not really customer service. If it goes down, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be because something you did. But there's nobody that you can call to answer questions or work with you, for example, to get it configured to work with your printer. Now, if you are an IT professional, that's fine. You can do all of that work yourself. But if you're a financial professional and IT is just kind of a secondary thought, having a managed service provider like Centrum or Ace Cloud Hosting is definitely going to be more beneficial to you. The two that I recommend for cloud hosting for financial professionals are going to be Centrum and Ace Cloud. Now, Centrum is pretty cost effective. It's definitely secure. They have reliable application hosting for a wide variety of providers, including Thomson Reuters, Intuit, CCH, and others. And it is designed around the needs of accounting firms and financial professionals. So whether you're doing this for your public accounting practice or you're doing this for the accounting team of a industry company, well, guess what? They are designed to fit your needs. They have great support, and they have 24/365 monitoring of all client applications. You have a problem, pick up the phone, and you'll be able to speak with somebody who can essentially help walk you through it. So they will host your virtual office for you when you work with their onboarding team. You kind of tell them what existing applications you are using. So whether you're using QuickBooks from Intuit, or maybe you're using Practice and UltraTax from Thomson Reuters, you know, the Lacert package, Sage, any of the Microsoft, CCH, other programs, they will install those onto your virtual office and just allow you to be able to operate. And you can mix and match all the different programs that you might want to use. They'll also do other business productivity stuff for you, as well as hosting your email and other data files. And they have experts to assist you with the data migration and configuration. Now, another application company that I would recommend that you consider would be Ace Cloud Hosting. Now, Ace is very similar to Centrum. They're based in Florida. They cater to the needs of financial professionals and CPA firms. They'll build you whatever virtual office you want with whatever combination of applications you want. They'll configure it and they'll maintain this private cloud for your organization. And they have a really good reputation, not only in the cloud accounting space, but then also other professions and industries as well, including construction, real estate firms, legal practices, and many others. And they will set up this desktop as a service or a DaaS-based environment to help clients achieve their goals for working remotely with really having not to take over any of the overhead with running IT. So out of the three of these, you know, my personal preference, if it was solely me, I would go with the AWS route because I have the knowledge to be able to work with that. And it's definitely the most cost effective. However, for the financial professionals, CPAs, and others who are watching, I would definitely check out Ace Cloud Hosting as well as Centrum because they have so much robust experience working with people in accounting and finance. All right, let's go ahead and have our next review question here. Which solution would offer the greatest level of customization at the lowest price point? Is it Centrum? No, it is not. Is it Ace Cloud Hosting? No, it is not. The correct answer here would be Amazon Workspaces. However, the drawback here is, you know, if it's price, quality, and service, AWS is definitely the cheapest and the quality is pretty good. They offer no service. So if you don't have the IT experience to be able to manage this service, it would not be something I would directly recommend for you. But the other two do, and they're just a little bit more expensive. Okay, in our final section for today, let's go ahead and talk through some different business accounting and cloud-based applications that are designed to natively work in the cloud. These are applications, for example, that will do your accounting, that will do different aspects of managing your organization, like your ERP, enterprise resource planning, and more, that are designed for remote workers and working from anywhere. These are traditionally not installable applications, so this is not going to be something that you would install on your computer like you would Office or Photoshop or any traditional thick client, but rather you would interact with these through a web browser or through a mobile app on your smartphone or tablet. Now, in my opinion, when it comes to small business accounting, my personal favorite is QuickBooks Online, QBOA, and that's QuickBooks Online Accountants Edition. So if you are a normal like business, you'd probably just go with QBO. If you are an accountant, though, you definitely need to check out the QBOA platform. It's identical to QBO, but it also brings some additional functionality that is great for professional accounting, including things like batch modification of transactions and additional reporting options that are not present in the underlying QuickBooks platform for normal client use. QBO is, again, natively built for the cloud. It shares a name, for example, with the traditional QuickBooks application that you installed on Windows, either the QuickBooks Desktop Premier or QuickBooks Enterprise. However, that is where the similarities end. It is a completely different application. And although it is not as feature rich as this desktop application, in my opinion, it meets all of the requirements for accounting in the sense that it's got a great general ledger, a great AP, AR module, great reporting, and it's an easy to use solution. And it's also built for people who are geographically dispersed. You can have people working in it side by side with each other, and you never have to deal with some of the traditional issues that you would come with working with a desktop file, like file sharing and having people on different devices and licensing. All those headaches go away with working with QBO. It natively supports that multi-user environment, natively supports remote access, natively supports mobile apps on tablets, smartphones, and more. And While it doesn't have the same features as the desktop version, in my opinion, stuff like the online bank feeds where it'll download the transactions directly from your bank or credit card provider make it really efficient and great to use. Now, if you are looking for something with a little bit more horsepower, though, okay, a lot of people just pick QuickBooks because it's the low-hanging fruit and they're familiar, and Intuit has great marketing, and that's one of the things people know about it is the fact that it does accounting. But please do not think that it is your only option. There are a lot of other options for cloud accounting. Now, one of my absolute favorites is a solution called Acumatica. Now, Acumatica is a very robust accounting and ERP platform, enterprise resource planning. It allows you to really kind of customize the solution to fit a wide range of use cases from, you know, manufacturing all the way up to professional service firms and more. It's natively designed for the cloud. However, and amazingly, you can also run it on premise as well. Another really kind of cool thing about this is that it's flat rate priced. Almost every cloud application you look at, they vary the price based off of the number of users. Not Acumatica. Acumatica is a flat rate thing based off of whatever your needs are, and that price doesn't vary depending on the number of people accessing the software. So in a lot of ways, it could be a heck of a lot more cost effective than what you would get with other solutions out there. It has great inventory management. I can tell you QuickBooks Online really isn't designed for complexity in inventory or point of sale for those matter, and or payroll for that matter as well. But inventory is notoriously bad in QuickBooks. Acumatica, on the other hand, it's really robust and you can do a lot of stuff and you can calculate inventory a number of ways and track a lot of different types of inventory, even inventory in different locations. It's a great productivity package. It allows you to be working with a wide variety of different tools inside of it to produce a wide range of different, really helpful, actionable, insightable information. It's again, natively designed to work anywhere, anytime. It's built for change. You can start using the application, and as you grow to really kind of excel with this, the software will adjust dynamically as well. And it's a solution that will grow with your business much more than other solutions that are out there on the market. Now, I got two Sage products I want to make you familiar with, Sage One as well as Sage Live. Now, if you come from the Peachtree family of products and you're more familiar with the Sage products and the Intuit products, Sage, I've always found, is more to be like an East Coast brand versus Intuit, which is definitely more of a West Coast brand. Sage has really made a big investment worth working with cloud tech. Sage One is the competitor, the most direct competitor to QuickBooks Online, and it offers pretty much a very identical set of features, but in the Sage way of doing things. It's anytime, anywhere. It's designed to have multiple people connecting and working together. It's very easy. I would say it's a more approachable accounting solution than what you would get with Intuit's QuickBooks. And it's pretty simple to be able to bring somebody online. As long as they have a general understanding about accounting, well, they could get started with Sage One pretty easily and grow into this package. And yes, Sage has some particular ways of how it handles things, but I find it to be a lot more intuitive than what you would get with Intuit products. And so if you're looking for a Sage cloud accounting solution, that Sage One platform is definitely a great SMB solution. Now, they have many different applications. Sage One is one style of this. They also have Sage 300 and others. If you are a bigger organization, though, let's say you're using Salesforce, which we'll talk about here in a minute, well, Sage Live is definitely going to be the one that you're going to want to consider to use. Sage Live is a accounting system designed for the needs of organizations that are using Salesforce. It natively plugs into Salesforce and the Force platform, and it's designed to be able to pull information out of that Salesforce sales cloud to kind of give you a 360 for your business. It's got incredible dashboards. It's got news feeds and notifications. You could drill down to kind of get whatever level of detail that you need. And because it's built natively on top of Salesforce, there's no data syncing. It's using the same database that Salesforce is using, which is fantastic because it's the same database your sales team and marketing teams are using. It's got this multi-dimensional general ledger, which is kind of a cool tool where you could see your sales data and operational data from a lot of different perspectives. And you can set up as many different perspectives as required. So territories, teams, projects, and more. And it's really different than a lot of the other solutions that are out there. But the big caveat here is that you have to be using Salesforce. Salesforce, if you're not familiar with it, is a very large CRM solution, customer relationship management. And that's where it kind of started, but it's grown so much bigger than that. Salesforce is a solution for managing your business. And it's definitely designed for larger businesses. It's not something I would recommend really kind of at the SMB level. You know, it would definitely be something I would recommend if you're like a Coca-Cola or a Ford or more. With Salesforce, it's designed not only to manage the sales side of the organization, but all of the other major aspects of your company. And there's a ton of different resources. And I would say probably its biggest selling point is the integration. It is the ability to be able to plug in almost any other application to pull out your sales and operational data from Salesforce. The downside is it's complicated and it's expensive. I would say most organizations are spending upwards of $150 a month on Salesforce for their company. And again, if you're that smaller SMB level, that's not really a good price point for a lot of different organizations, mine included. It's, in my opinion, way too expensive for what we would do. But one of the really cool things about it is the fact that you can plug it into so many other types of things. You know, and it's got services, for example, for managing employees and training and analytics and commerce and others. And it really does work. But I find that you need to be a larger organization to be able to work effectively. Now, if you are a smaller organization, maybe you're an entrepreneur, maybe you're just getting started, and you just need something that's just bonehead simple, something that's not going to be complicated with respect to managing your accounting, but is remote and simple, well, I personally recommend you take a look at FreshBooks. It is a brand new accounting solution. When I say brand new, I'm really kind of saying this doesn't have its roots in other products. Like QuickBooks Online definitely has its roots in Intuit and how Intuit has always approached accounting, or Sage Live and Sage One in the Sage way of doing business. Well, FreshBooks is a third party in this particular instance. And they really kind of designed it around the needs of small businesses, micro businesses, Schedule C taxpayers, entrepreneurs, and startup. And it's geared towards service-oriented organizations. Now, when it got started, FreshBooks was really only looking at the AR side of business. So invoicing, collections, things of this nature. However, it has transitioned, and over the last 2 or 3 years, it has grown into a full-blown company management accounting solution. So it will absolutely handle your invoicing, but now it can also do, for example, your AP as well and manage your bills. It's a good solution for managing employee expenses and others. Comparable solutions would be, again, QuickBooks Online and Xero on the cloud accounting side. It also has a number of really great functions for tracking employee expenses. And so a comparable solution for the expense tracking side of this would be that Expensify solution. But if you're just getting started, you need something essentially to manage your employee expenses, but you also want to do your invoicing and manage a couple of bills, and you're not an accountant, well, FreshBooks, I think, would be much more approachable than any of the other solutions mentioned here. Now, one last solution I do want to point out that's a really good solution for medium-sized organizations. You know, so QuickBooks and FreshBooks are really kind of at that small-level business. Salesforce is for the high-end business. What about something in between? My personal recommendation and go-to is Dynamics 365. Now, this is a Microsoft product. And why I like this is that it is very flexible. It has a ton of different apps. There are apps, for example, for managing your sales operations, finances, field service, marketing, and others. It's got good inventory, tracking, and compliance with that. And you could buy either just a app, or you can license them all as part of the 365 package. But one of the things I really like about this is the fact that it integrates really well with everything else Microsoft does. In our organization, for example, we are a Microsoft shop. We are avid users of Office 365 and now Dynamics 365. And I think this is a great solution for when QuickBooks isn't enough, but a full-blown ERP solution like Salesforce is too much and too expensive. I find that Dynamics 365 sits in that middle market very well, and it's a good mix and match of features, functionality, and at a more compelling price point. Well, folks, that does bring us to the end of our podcast for today. Let's go ahead and have our final review question. Which solution or platform does not natively support any accounting functionality? Okay, so what core platform does not support any native functionality? Is it QuickBooks Online? Absolutely not. QuickBooks Online is of itself an accounting platform, as is Acumatica, as is Dynamics 365 and their financial package. The correct answer here is Salesforce. Salesforce is a customer relationship management platform, a CRM platform, and its benefit comes from the fact that it integrates and has a ton of tools that will talk to it. And the example that we talked about that if would plug into Salesforce was Sage Live. So Sage Live only exists inside the Salesforce environment, and it is a tool that you can use in addition to Salesforce, because Salesforce itself does not provide any of that cloud-based accounting. Okay, so what did we discuss today? Well, we went through in the first part the principles of being able to work anywhere, including different software and hardware that you might want to consider. You know, get yourself a good laptop, get yourself a dedicated, quiet workspace, or at least work hours if possible. You know, get yourself good internet access. And then we also took a deep look into virtual desktop solutions and enterprise cloud-based resources such as QuickBooks Online, Acumatica, Dynamics 365, and others. These are applications that are designed to facilitate that remote work because they themselves are cloud-based, you know, and if the application you're working with is cloud-based, where you are really doesn't matter. Now, future episodes of this series, we're going to explore collaboration tools. We're going to explore project management tools. We're going to explore business productivity tools, communication tools for your organization, and more. Really, everything that is designed to make your staff be geographically dispersed and at least give you the ability to be able to work anywhere. Now, I do want to remind you, if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, you can earn credits for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super, super simple. After watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com. And today, please use course code WEA1. Again, that is cpetoday.com. Use course code WEA1. You'll take a short 5-question quiz, and then you will earn a certificate for watching or listening to today's class. And it is a simple way of staying on top of your credits and a great way to maintaining your licensing. If you like today's content, please consider liking and subscribing to us. You can find us on all social media as CPE Today or CPEtoday.com. You can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and others. We would absolutely love if you consider leaving us a review or some feedback on our content. We broadcast live twice a week, most weeks, Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 Pacific. But as a reminder, you can always listen to us on your own schedule. You can listen after the fact on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and others. We'd love for you to consider subscribing so you can get access to our content in the future. As always, it is my pleasure being with you. Thank you so much for listening and watching, and I'll see you back in the office real soon. Take care.